This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Let's go! The highway's calling, the sun is shining. Let's get in the car and just remember. Let's go! Get in, Lou.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Brian Loudermilk is one half of Kerrigan Loudermilk, the musical theatre duo, who has made a name for themselves as the ones to watch in the New York theatre scene. Their works together include musicals like Henry and Mudge, the unauthorized autobiography of Samantha Brown, Tales from the Bad Years, and most recently, The Mad Ones. Brian is in Kuala Lumpur to run a masterclass on musical theatre and to present a concert, and he's here with me today. Thank you for joining me, Brian.
Hi, Sharmila. It's so nice to be here.
And how are you enjoying Kuala Lumpur so far?
I love Kuala Lumpur. First off, the Kuala Lumpur airport is my favorite airport in the world. It's my favorite place for a layover. I've been there many, many times. This is my third or fourth trip to the region. So it's kind of hard to come to Asia and not spend at least a day at the Kuala Lumpur airport. And then beyond that, I just love Malaysian food so much. I just eat as much laksa as I can possibly get my hands on.
Well, you clearly know your way around already. If you found your way to laksa, that's one of the most important things.
I just have to make sure that while I'm here in the next few days, I get some fish head soup. That's my... the fish head curry.
But hang on, you have a performance. Now, can you actually deal with all the spicy food and then singing?
People keep saying that. We were out with the music director of the private school that we're working with last night, and he was trying to dissuade me from eating the chilies, but I'm good to go. I just came from Thailand. I'm good to eat Malaysia level spicy.
Okay, glad to hear it. So tell me a little bit, Brian, about how you and Kate Kerrigan, who's your frequent collaborator, started working together. I understand that you've known each other since you were kids in school.
Yeah. Kate and I grew up together doing musicals together in community theaters when we were just little kids. And then we grew up and realized it was something we could sort of start doing. In the U.S., there are tons of very small community theaters, and theater in high school and college is a big thing. So it was always easy to look up to kids who were a few years older than you and to find ways to get in. I started noticing that there were some really, really wonderful singers around and that I was not one of them. I was someone who just needed to sit down and play the piano. So I found myself gravitating over towards the piano and looking for other ways that I could participate other than just using my glorious gift of a voice.
Well, you certainly seem happy enough to sing, which I'm very happy about.
I have a bad feeling at this concert tomorrow night. I have a bad feeling that I'm going to be singing a lot more than I usually like to, but everyone else seems happy about it.
So what is sort of your role in this collaboration when you're with Kate Kerrigan usually?
Well, so unlike a lot of writing teams in theater, Kate and I do book, music, and lyrics. We do all of it, and a lot of songwriters only do the songs. So we've written a bunch of original musicals where we wrote the entire story and all of the songs that come through it. So as a lot of collaborators will tell you, it starts with you just sitting on the couch and eating a lot of spicy food together and talking about the story and breaking that story apart, finding the places for the songs. And then at some point, we'll go away and Kate is more of the words person and she'll write the script and the lines that the actors say. And I'm more the songwriter type person, and I'll go away and start thinking about like song titles and feels for songs. And then we, come back in each other's faces, sit down together. Kate writes more lyrics for the song. I weigh in on the shape of the story, and we just kind of go back and forth.
And where did you guys grow up?
We grew up in both in Pennsylvania, which is, a little south of New York City. So New York City was always there in the distance as somewhere to aspire to.
So what was that journey that took the both of you from Pennsylvania and now to Off-Broadway in New York?
Well, so Kate went to Barnard College in New York City, connected to Columbia University, and I went to Harvard University in Boston, but I dropped out after one semester. Our musical, The Mad Ones, sort of originated around that time. For me, it was very much about being 18 years old and changing the direction you're going in and starting a brand new path. So I was certainly doing that, and we started writing together and started to, once we arrived in New York City at the same time, we were like, hey, I see you, you're making plays. And she's like, I see you, you're writing songs. We should put those things together. And so we started to.
And do you guys also do separate work?
We do. We do. Kate's also a playwright, and I am a vlogger on the YouTube now. I've been writing far sillier songs and singing into my camera, and it's been really neat spending the past 10 weeks wandering around Southeast Asia. I have a tiny little guitar with me where I make up pretty silly songs, and I just kind of make them up as I go along, and oftentimes in, you know, airports and train stations and on buses and in cabs, just around. So
so why, what drew you in the beginning, and what keeps you so obviously in love with music and musical theater particularly?
I love the way that songs can open up people and bring people to a higher emotional state. I like that songs can be used to connect with people. When someone is on stage or just a few feet away from you singing, they're showing something very deep and personal to you. And I like how open that makes people. I think that people can say things in a song they wouldn't feel comfortable saying in speech. And I don't know, when I think about like the last moments I had with my great-grandmother, when she had Alzheimer's and she could remember almost nothing, and I sat there with my mother and my sister and my grandmother, and we all just sang, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray, which was a song that she used to sing to us. And it was the last thing she was able to remember.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's something about a great song that can just stay with you.
Oh, that's a lovely story. Do you find now that with what's happening in the U.S. in the last year?
Yeah, we're really sorry about that.
No, no. I will not hold you accountable.
Okay.
Well, it has been a tumultuous year.
Yeah.
Do you find this sort of being reflected in the musical theater scene? Do you find that this is sort of coming into the kinds of work that people like yourself are doing?
I can say that it's something that I can only speak for Kate and I and say that it's something that we've written some songs about and something that definitely informs our work. So in all of our work, Kate is a feminist writer, and the work that she does tends to have a political slant, and I've been really lucky to be around to amplify that. The Mad Ones is a feminist musical with four characters, three of which are big, exciting female characters, and one male ingenue who's just kind of there for eye candy. And we're really proud of that. I feel like the numbers of female writers that are produced in the United States are still way, way below where they should be. I'm proud to generally collaborate with female writers and to try and amplify those voices. In terms of, you know, the terrible dirty word that I'm not sure I'm allowed to say on Malaysian radio of Trump, you know, it's hard. We live in New York City. We live in a little bubble. Mm. There's definitely a lot of art that's being created in response to that. Whether or not that art is impactful in our larger country is another question. Our country is deeply, deeply divided right now, and there's not a lot that breaks through from one side to the other. Weirdly, I take a lot of solace in some mainstream art. I think that the progressive messages of movies like the Disney Star Wars franchise, mm-hmm. And the elevation of female and minority characters in those kinds of like big blockbuster films, mm-hmm. I actually think that those are doing an enormous amount for the future. And, you know, as Americans, we're responsible for such a large percentage of the culture that's put out globally. And so, you know, it's terrifying that we have to rely on enormous media companies to dictate what's going to be in that global culture. So we can only just hope that, you know, these enormous media companies are doing it with an ethical slant and with an eye towards elevating female actors, actors of color, and messages that represent our progressive values.
So what is your approach, yours and Kate's approach to musical theater, to storytelling? What would you say sets you guys apart?
We want to see things that haven't been seen before. We want to tell stories that haven't been told before, and we want to do them in ways that that haven't been told in musical theater. So our musical, The Bad Years, is an immersive house party musical that you walk through. So, like, You walk into a big house and you're handed a red Solo cup. And you find your way through, and there are wandering musicians, and there are people singing pop songs, you know, a foot in front of you, right in front of your face, and there are multiple rooms with multiple different songs in them, and you can lose yourself and follow different stories and wander through this environment and actually be inside of a great dance number. You can actually be inside of great singing and have it all happening around you and lose yourself and kind of have the experience of being in a big house party. Again, The Mad Ones is a show that is a girl sitting in her driveway in conversation with her best friend who she lost in a traffic accident, and is very much only about this dialogue with these two powerful women in her life. And the only action in the show is that the car moves from out of the driveway at the end of the show, and that's the only thing that happens. And it's you don't generally get a musical who has an 18-year-old female protagonist, let alone like three female leads in a musical, and to get to see how those characters push off of each other, that's something we haven't seen in the musical. And in general, that's what we're pursuing. We're pursuing characters that speak to our generation and that speak to, yeah, to our thoughts and feelings.
And who are some of your musical theater inspirations?
Well, we all pray at the altar of Sondheim. Stephen Sondheim is Jesus for us. We love Stephen Sondheim. And then Janine Tesori is a newer musical theater icon. And we've been lucky to have a lot of great writers who all kind of came from Stephen Sondheim. I'm someone who, I love Andrew Lloyd Webber. I saw Cats when I was 6 years old, and I was like, oh my God, a cat jumped into my lap while singing a musical theater song, Memory. And I was just smitten. Have you seen Cats?
I have. I love
Cats.
Oh
my God, it's the best, yeah. Right? Let no one say that Cats is not like one of the greatest musicals of all time.
I still remember scenes from Cats, and I've only watched it once, just primarily because visually.
I know, right?
Just like, what am I watching? What is going on? Yeah.
So The Bad Years is basically Cats, but like in a house party and without cats, but with drunk Americans. Yeah.
So what have been some of the shows that you've watched in the last year that sort of moved you or made you want to jump out of your seat?
That moved me and made me jump out of my seat. My friend Itamar Moses just won a Tony Award for The Band's Visit.
That's right.
Just yesterday. He is extraordinary, and that show was extraordinary. My friend Lindsay Mendez, I'm just going to talk about all my friends who just won Tony Awards. Lindsay Mendez just won for Carousel. She is a genius. You can watch her singing our songs on YouTube. She sings a song of ours called Avalanche, and it's amazing. And our good friend Michael Arden just won a Tony Award for the revival of Once on This Island, and it's just magical. It's an extraordinary evening of theater and one of my favorite musicals of all time, written by my idols, Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens. So, Michael Arden is incredible, and his revival of Once on This Island is something to see if you can possibly make it to New York.
Well, I'm speaking to musical theater composer and lyricist Brian Loudermilk, who's currently in KL for a concert and a masterclass. We'll be back after a short break, and we'll continue talking about musical theater and the musical theater scene in Malaysia. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to Brian Loudermilk, who is a musical theater composer and lyricist from the U.S. and a part of the Kerrigan Loudermilk duo. Brian is in KL for a concert and also a masterclass, where he's going to talk to us all about musical theater and the joys of being involved in it.
The joys, the complete joys.
So how much do you know, Brian, of the musical theater scene in Malaysia?
Okay, what do I know? My wife saw a poster for Mud last time we were here. I've heard Mud is great. That's the only Malaysian musical I know about.
Okay, well,
I'm so sorry.
I think that's interesting because what we get from your part of the world tend to be the larger, splashier, showy musicals, the classics. And, you know, sadly, we probably wouldn't get a lot of access to the kind of work you do unless we were to go to New York.
Yeah.
So that tends to shape the musical theater scene here as well. We do get a lot of interesting, more, not smaller, but, you know, close to home, real life kind of stuff. But generally, the idea to musical theater here tends to be large, splashy. But you guys do something that's a little bit different from that.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm kind of interested to hear about what your performance here will be, and perhaps more specifically, what you're going to talk about in your masterclass.
Something that's been really exciting in the past few years is getting to visit and interact with musical theater students around the world, in places like China or Bangkok, and now in Kuala Lumpur. And something that's been really fascinating is that despite the fact that most of the actual productions that they're able to see, those fans of musical theater, being just, you know, Les Miserables or Wicked, if they go on vacation, Lion King, despite the fact that those are the only shows that they're exposed to, they have another avenue in which they're able to see a whole world of musical theater, which is YouTube. Mm. And it's really exciting to see that to them, some of these stars on YouTube with millions of views are people who are just as valid musical theater stars as the people they saw in Lion King. And it's really exciting to be able to be in this dialogue with musical theater students in Malaysia, in the Philippines, in Thailand, and to be able to have them sing my songs, be able to respond to them, and to be part of their growth as actors, and to be influencing their aesthetic in musical theater from so far away. That's thrilling. So my masterclass is going to probably involve me asking them a lot of questions at the beginning, because first you have to kind of know what their framework is and where they're coming from. And then from there, I think I'm probably going to focus on, you know, Kate and my aesthetic of musical theater, which is one that's very personal and very much designed for the room that it's in. So I think it'll be in a pretty small room. And so it's all about just connecting with that small audience and telling a big story in a way that feels really personal and really intimate. So we'll focus a lot on that. We probably won't be singing songs from Cats. We'll probably be singing, with all due respect to Sir Lloyd Webber, we're going to be focusing on some songs that are, you know, smaller, more intimate, very contemporary pieces of musical theater that are about, like, you know, a really big, exciting journey, but for one small person.
And you'll be singing with local musicians?
Yeah. They're all students. One of them is coming from Vietnam all the way, who's someone who commutes in to study with this incredible teacher, Dominic. And the rest of the students live, you know, in the Kuala Lumpur area. It's a private school that they meet up, I believe, twice a week. And so this will be just like what they always do, except I'll be there to help out and add my two cents.
So you guys, you've done off-Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Are there dreams and designs to sort of hit Broadway? And if so, what might that look like?
Well, it looks like a lot of money. It's very expensive to put something on Broadway, millions and millions of dollars. But, you know, we've been gathering a lot of support, and who knows? It's possible that it may not look the same as other shows' arrivals on Broadway may look like. It may look like a lot of crowd. It may be partially crowdfunded and come from our very large fan base online, which we're so grateful for. It may come from one very wealthy person believing in us, and it may just come from, you know, that perfect alchemy of the right star in the right show at the right time. But anything that allows us to keep getting to write songs that bring people together and that move people, that's that's the path we're going to keep going down.
Would getting onto Broadway itself perhaps alter the way you and Kate work? Would it change the kind of stories that you have been telling?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. I think that for better or worse, we really, really believe in the kind of art that we make, and we really, really believe in the people who we make it with. And so whether those stages are, you know, 100-seat stages around the world or one very big stage in New York City, I think as long as we get to make the things we want to make, I think that we're going to be really happy with that.
You mentioned crowdfunding earlier, and one of the things that I found really interesting about your journey thus far was that you guys actually did a Kickstarter campaign to fund a concert tour,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah.
You know, that seemed like something that isn't very common.
No. We raised $35,000 to fund two CDs and a concert tour. And we did it mostly through, you know, $10 and $20 donations. So it's really exciting. And so now as we figure out how to bring the Mad Ones to fans that are all over the world, one of the things we're looking at is, okay, everyone's not in New York. It doesn't make sense to do a big splashy production in New York. It makes sense to try and figure out how to bring this to our fans where they are and to find some way to like stream a production to them or like record a great video presentation of it and a great album. We want to bring the things we're making to our fans where they are.
What are some of the trends in the movements that you're seeing now, both Broadway and off-Broadway?
I think that Dear Evan Hansen and Heathers and the online success of Be More Chill that's coming this summer have all like really solidified the case that you can get younger audiences into the theater, that you can like get, you know, 18 to 24 year olds, and that an audience for a musical doesn't need to be over 45. I think that, you know, theater sometimes is really forgetful. Whether they'll continue to remember that in a few years is another question. I think that there have been, you know, little beacons of hope. Like I look at something like Fun Home and I think, amazing, those are the kinds of stories we're telling. Whether or not, again, that's something that theater will remember in the next few years is another question. I think that, again, Kate and I are going to keep making what we're making. And yeah, and we'll have to see whether they can remember that when you elevate female writers and you go after those voices, when you trust a personal story that feels resonant, and when you don't try and aim for something very big, but just for something really honest and authentic, that there can be great success in that. If they remember that, then I think we'll be in good shape.
So when it comes to what you just said, elevating female voices, and not just female voices, but other voices that have historically not been represented enough.
Yeah.
And you're a white man.
I am.
Because that's the argument, right? That by giving something to someone, you're taking something away from someone else. So what does it feel like for you to be working with a female collaborator and to be working on projects that do elevate these voices?
So I believe that stories are not off limits to certain writers. I believe that more is more when it comes to storytellers. And I am eager and excited for underrepresented voices to claim stories as their own. And I'm ecstatic when actors in the theater are cast in roles that you wouldn't normally expect them for. And that's something that Kate and I have done from the beginning in our work, is to advocate for colorblind casting. There are scarier trends for us, things that make us a little nervous, connected to trying to protect certain stories from certain writers and saying that a writer of color isn't allowed to tell a story. And I would say the opposite can also be kind of terrifying, saying that, like, okay, that any story is off limits to another writer is something that scares Kate and I. We don't think that's a great direction to go in. We try and advocate for colorblind casting always. Theater is a medium that, unlike film, is supposed to be representational. It's not supposed to be an exact mirror of what the world is. So something like Hamilton is like just the most thrilling, exciting cry in the night to wake people up. And it's something that should not be treated as a one-off. But yes, this should always be the case. This should always be possible to look at a historical figure through another lens, or to treat a piece of theater as an opportunity to not show the world as it is, but how it could be. Fabulous. Yes, that should always be the case. And then, you know, we try and seek out collaborators and stories that are less represented. There's a piece we're working on right now with Chinese collaborators about a Chinese ballerina. And that's a story that we don't feel like we're not allowed to tell. We feel like that's a story and that we're allowed to work on with the, it's an autobiographical story, and we're collaborating with the woman who wrote it. And, the woman whose life it's based on, and working with Chinese collaborators. And it feels like that's really appropriate for us to be in there. I think it was appropriate for Michael Arden to direct the production of Once on This Island, and to do it in a way that brought in Haitian collaborators and that really tried to show the story of what had happened in Haiti. I think that when we try and dictate that some stories aren't not on limits to writers, that's scary. That said, I will say there are some other things happening in theater where you see, you know, five white male collaborators on a show with a female protagonist, mm-hmm. or five white writers on a show. Yeah, and that's not good. That's something that hopefully will be shamed into non-existence.
Well, I guess the key is actually what you just said, you know, in the case of Michael Arden or yourself with the Chinese ballerina, the collaboration, the reaching out, and to kind of fill in where your gaps might be.
Yeah.
Are those things that are constantly like on your mind when you work on
absolutely,
these kind of-
absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and you try and talk about it tactfully, but it requires a commitment in resources from producers to saying, you know, okay, like with Once on This Island, for example, they had to do a national casting call. Mm-hmm. It requires a major investment. And that's something that I think, like, broadly in the U.S. right now is a wonderful thing that's happening, is people at the top are starting to realize that this impacts their bottom line and are starting to be able to be willing to put more resources towards looking farther for other voices and for other actors. But it requires an effort. You have to look outside of your bubble.
And when it comes to talking about representation, how that would affect somebody like us in Malaysia is often that standard of what we should be doing or what kind of stories we should be telling is so often set by the US and the UK. What do you think the rest of the world could be doing in terms of finding their own stories, their own voices, even their own audiences for that matter?
Yeah, I wish that rather than exporting the culture that we've made to quite such an extent that we have, I wish we were better at exporting the original ideas and the original sense of creativity that led to them in the first place. I wish that we could inspire a current generation of young creatives who are growing up around the world, especially if you think about a country like Malaysia. Like, there are countries that are where, for, you know, the first time, you've got generations of kids that are growing up and, like, starting to have viable paths in the arts.
Yeah.
Parents who are slightly more affluent, mm-hmm. and, like, more able. I would never have been able to go on to a career in musical theater if my father hadn't, like, figured out how to go to college and figured out how to make enough money to support us. I mean, you have to first kind of clear those initial hurdles. But I wish that I long for a way to, rather than saying, here, look, here's Star Wars, here, watch it, to say, here are the tools, here's how you can. The thing we say to American high schoolers and college students is, do not wait to be given permission. Start to make things. The thing I'll be saying to students tomorrow is, do not wait for people to write you a Malaysian musical that features an all-Malaysian cast that requires you to move to the U.S. to be in it. Like, please, please, make your own. Tell your stories. Tell them. Don't try and imitate someone else. Just tell your story the way you want it to be. Write the roles for yourself that you don't see in the world. And that's where so many of these beloved American properties have come from. And so that's what I hope is the path forward.
And what's next for yourself? And what are you and Kate working on next?
we have an enormous musical that, again, talking about like the appropriateness of writers to stories, mm-hmm. we have a musical called Republic, which is about, it is an adaptation of Henry IV set in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. Oh. And Michael Arden is the director of that piece, actually. And that's a piece that he was just in London to take some meetings, and we're specifically like trying to figure out how to integrate Irish collaborators onto the piece. And that's something that we'll be really careful about. But that's a story that we feel actually pretty equipped to tell as Americans and as people who are like close to it but not physically there. And we're really excited about that. And then beyond that, if you check out our YouTube channels, YouTube/Kerrigan Loudermilk and YouTube/FromB, we're going to be continuing to make things not just for people in New York City but for people who love musicals all over the world.
And you've done a tour of London.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you've done different venues in the U.S.
Yeah.
Will we be seeing you do something more extensive, perhaps?
I'm hoping to come back out again pretty soon, and I'm hoping to be in Southeast Asia once or twice again over this next year. I love being in this region. I'm going to try and get some more European tours going as well. I really, really enjoy working with musical theater students around the world, and kind of it's almost like this YouTube diaspora, like seeing the people who've been inspired by musicals that they haven't even seen on stage.
Yeah.
I want to meet them in person. I want to learn from them. And I want to learn how I can continue to inspire them and to continue to make more art for them.
Well, I hope we see you back here very soon,
me
then.
Too.
Thank you for joining me today,
Thank
Brian.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking to Brian Loudermilk about his career in musical theater. Brian will be performing in a concert tomorrow night, the 13th of June, at the Monday Show Subang. Tickets are priced at 55 ringgit. And for more information, email dom@mondayshow.com.my or WhatsApp 012-9177-083. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app, which is available on the App Store or Google Play. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.